This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company. For more information and links to all our great podcasts, visit hartmanmedia.com.
Welcome to the Holistic Survival Show with Jason Hartman. The economic storm brewing around the world is set to spill into all aspects of our lives. Are you prepared? Where are you going to turn for the critical life skills necessary to survive and prosper? The Holistic Survival Show is your family's insurance for a better life. Jason will teach you to think independently, to understand threats, and how to create the ultimate action plan. Sudden change or worst case scenario, you'll be ready. Welcome to Holistic Survival, your key resource for protecting the people, places, and profits you care about in uncertain times. Ladies and gentlemen, your host, Jason Hartman.
It's my pleasure to welcome Norman Rogers. He is a policy advisor to the Heartland Institute and the best-selling author of Dumb Energy, A Critique of Wind and Solar Energy. Norm, welcome. How are you?
I'm fine. I'm pleased to be here.
Yep. Good to have you on the show. So give our listeners a sense of geography. Where are you located?
I'm in Las Vegas.
Okay. I used to live there myself for about a year and a half. When you drive out of Las Vegas, especially past the Palm Springs area, you see all these giant windmills. They've been there for decades. Is your thesis that wind and solar energy just are uneconomical, or they just don't work, or what? Where are you coming from on this?
They're entirely dependent on huge subsidies. They're not economical. They're really totally useless. They make no sense at all. The reason is that they are erratic energy. You can't count on them. Mm-hmm. You know, the windmills only work when the wind happens to be blowing. The solar doesn't work at night at all. And if a cloud gets in front of the sun, the solar turns off too. So those generating installations always have to be backed up by a conventional plant. So when you have wind or solar, you basically have to have two plants, one wind or solar plant and then another conventional plant to back it up. So the question comes, why bother with the wind and solar? Just use the backup plant and everything will work fine.
Well, right, but if we can let the backup plant be idle a little bit, right, wouldn't that be greener? Wouldn't it be more sustainable, or is that not really the case?
You will save some fuel in the backup plant when the backup plant is not working hard. The value of the fuel that you save is worth, in the case of natural gas, it's worth about 2 cents a kilowatt hour. But the wind or solar, they both cost about the same, around 7 cents a kilowatt hour without subsidies. Of course, with the subsidies, it can be a lot
more expensive.
Cheaper.
Well, you mean the wind and solar would be more expensive without the subsidies, right?
Yeah, without subsidies, it would be about 7 cents a kilowatt hour.
Oh, okay. And what is the cost of traditional electricity?
Depends on the type of plant. Say roughly 5 cents a kilowatt hour for natural gas.
Okay, so it's what, 30% less, give or take?
No, that's not the right comparison.
Okay.
The right comparison is compare the fuel use in the conventional plant with the cost of the wind or solar. Because you have to have a conventional plant backing up the wind and solar.
Got it.
The wind and solar, the plant's still there, all the capital investment. The one thing you save with the wind and solar, the value it creates is to save some fuel in the backup plants. And the fuel's worth about 2 cents a kilowatt hour, but the wind and solar cost 7 cents a kilowatt hour. So that's how you get to a 70% subsidy.
Okay, so wouldn't people, especially on the left, argue that, hey, you know, when you take oil, for example, and I don't really know much about coal, you know, oil is subsidized through all sorts of tax schemes and so forth. And, you know, they always complain that the old fossil fuel is subsidized too, right? It's all subsidized. Is that a legitimate argument?
It's completely false. Mm-hmm. There's two different ways they get at that. They bring up the oil depletion allowance, things like that. But actually, there are huge tax breaks for renewable energy, too. But the one way they try to say oil is getting a great subsidy is they say that, well, it's creating global warming damage, and it's not paying for that global warming damage. But that's far out. It's nonsensical.
That's what's known as an externality. So,
yeah.
You know, this is when a company or a system like the oil, you know, the fossil fuel system creates an external burden outside of its own business model and its own supply chain, right? But, you know, look at solar and wind energy do that too. I mean, you know, certainly wind energy creates all sorts of externalities. You know, all sorts of birds are dying. Nobody really talks about that. Solar energy, tons of environmental waste is created in the production of solar panels. You know, they require maintenance, they require constant cleaning because, you know, they don't work if they're dusty, right? And, you know, there's all sorts of externalities with everything. The only question is, which externalities are more burdensome on the environment, right?
Well, actually, some of the externalities due to conventional fossil fuels are actually positive because adding carbon dioxide to the atmosphere encourages plant growth. And it hasn't been greening deserts since we've started adding a substantial amount of carbon dioxide to the atmosphere.
Yeah, that's sort of another debate. I mean, I think this crazy debate on the global warming issue, there's so many layers to that onion, right? And they just go, oh, the Earth is warming. Oh, my God. You know, it's terrible. But it's not always terrible. There are a lot of benefits to global warming if it's happening, if it's happening. But there are all sorts of benefits to global warming that nobody really talks about. And that's a weird thing. You know, people probably think, oh, he's nuts by saying that. But it's true. It's absolutely true. There are many more places that if global warming really occurs in any real way, will become arable and certain climates that will become warmer. It's not like this is all negative. Nobody ever talks about that. But, you know, if you bring that up in conversation today, people cast you out as a lunatic, you know.
Yeah, it's become kind of a religion. The globe,
it's definitely, you know, a religion.
It's not really called global warming anymore. They changed the name to climate change.
Yes, it's a more convenient term because you can do more with that term. It's much more flexible.
And also, the climate wasn't warming.
Yeah, right. A little minor detail.
Right. Wind and solar. If you were to just plow these installations under, the electric grid would carry on just fine because they're always backed up by conventional plants. Mm-hmm. It's just a complete waste of money. They're not even effective for reducing CO2 emissions. If you want to reduce CO2 emissions, you know, there's such a thing as a carbon offset that there's a market and you can buy. And for about $10, you can buy a carbon offset that results in reducing CO2 emissions by a metric ton. To use wind or solar to get a carbon offset, you're talking $100 to $200. So they're not even economical ways of reducing carbon emissions.
One argument that, you know, makes sense to me in general is that, look, if this worked, if wind and solar made sense, it could survive and thrive in a free market without subsidies. You know, there is a part of that that I sort of hedge on a little bit by saying, hey, look, you know, sometimes an initiative is so big that you need to engage in a little bit of Keynesianism. In other words, the government needs to kind of start the ball rolling, right? And hopefully after that, private enterprise will pick it up and run with it because they'll bring the cost down a little bit with a little bit of production. But this hasn't happened in decades. I mean, you know, they've been subsidizing this since, what, at least the 70s, and the free market still isn't adopting it in any significant way.
You'd have to reduce the cost by about a factor of 3 for it to start being competitive. It's basically propaganda that keeps it going, and lobbying and misleading information that's spread all the time, saying that wind is competitive with fossil fuels. Sure, it's competitive if you have a huge subsidies amounting to 70% of the cost.
Does everybody remember, it was T. Boone Pickens, right, the billionaire, who just went hog wild into wind energy, what was that, maybe 10 years ago, I think, and he invested a fortune into it. And, you know, he just said, look, this is the way it has to go. We got to do wind. And he just plowed, I don't know how much money, but, you know, I want to say over $1 billion. And he lost his shirt. It was like, you know, he even admitted that. I saw some TV interviews a long time ago, said it was like one of the worst decisions ever. I mean, what happened there? Do you know much about that story?
I don't know, but certainly people are making money with wind power, and it's because of the subsidies. Mm-hmm. Not just the subsidies, but preferential treatment. For instance, the utilities are generally required to accept all the wind power that's offered, even if it's inconvenient for them.
You mean they've got to accept it back into the grid, even if they don't want it,
yes.
Right? Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Oh, wow. You have weird situations like in the Pacific Northwest where they're actually selling wind power for a negative fee. They actually pay people to take the wind power. And that occurs, well, that occurs in the spring when there's a lot of hydro. Uh-huh. And normally the wind power would be shut out because the hydro is very cheap. But if they can't sell the wind power, they can't get the 2.4 cents a kilowatt hour subsidy. Mm-hmm. So they'll actually pay people to take the wind power so they can get the government subsidy.
Yeah. What else should we know about this? Like looking at your book, for example, you know, the economic argument, we kind of went into some of that. Anything more you want to tell us on you know, like this detailed comparison, you know, wind, solar, natural gas, electricity?
As far as the global warming goes, people who are really true believers in global warming and scientifically informed, there are some of them, for instance, James Hansen, they all advocate nuclear. If you really believe in global warming, which I don't, and you want to cut CO2 emissions, nuclear is the way to go.
Oh, nuclear is the best deal ever. I mean, it's amazing how it got cast such a bad hand, you know. There's almost never a nuclear accident. The plants today are much safer and more efficient, but you can't build one anymore. I mean, Jane Fonda, I think, ruined that whole industry single-handedly. That is the cleanest, most efficient thing of all. Nothing beats it. Yeah, it does it.
It's the cheapest fuel there is, too, mm-hmm. which is not always understood. Nuclear is going great in places like South Korea and in France.
Well, yeah, it's one of the things France does right, which is kind of amazing. Yeah, you know, here Germany has this giant solar initiative, and, you know, right next door you've got France with this nuclear energy that is massively more efficient than Germany, and Germany is covering all their farmland with ugly solar panels. Talk about, you know, non-renewable. You've just totally taken the land forever.
The Germans are completely nuts. First of all, Germany is not a country with abundant sunshine, and so building solar is really makes no sense at all.
Yeah, if you're going to do solar, put it in Arizona, right?
Be much better off. And electricity in Germany costs close to 40 cents a kilowatt hour.
Wow.
Which is about two or three times what we're paying. And another thing that's going on is the Sierra Club's campaign against coal. Mm-hmm. They have a whole legion of lawyers and propaganda outfits and websites and grassroots demonstrations against coal generating plants. But coal is a wonderful resource that we have an abundance of. And there's a special advantage to coal that's not shared by natural gas. And that is that if you have a coal plant, you generally have a big pile of coal in the yard, maybe enough fuel to keep the plant going for 30 days, 60 days. Whereas with natural gas, if the pipeline is sabotaged or breaks down, the plant's going to go down very quickly. So it's a big mistake for us to be closing down our coal plants and switching to natural gas. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, right now, natural gas is so cheap that it tends to undermine the coal. But there's no reason to close down functioning coal plants that are existing, which they are doing, and then building new natural gas plants to replace them. Mm-hmm. You can't replace that plant you closed down with wind or solar, okay? If you close down a plant, you're going to pretend to replace it with wind and solar. You're actually going to have to build two new plants. You build the wind or solar plant, and then you build the backup plant for the wind or solar. And that backup plant today is almost always natural gas.
Mm-hmm. So talk to us about the real solution here. And I just think that's nuclear. I mean, there's I can't remember her name, but a woman wrote a book. I've really wanted to get her on the show over the years. And she wrote a book setting out to promote the cause of solar and wind. And she ended up, you know, finding that nuclear was the best choice after an abundant amount of research. Do we have any chance at a nuclear future and, you know, address the issue of the economics, the safety, the waste, these kinds of things that are the big objections people have?
Nuclear has a great potential for future growth. There's a lot of technology that hasn't really been incorporated in the engineering of plants that make nuclear cheaper, safer, more flexible. That's coming online overseas, you know, in South Korean places like that. Right now, most of the plants we have are called Generation 2 plants. The Generation 3 plants, which are just starting to be built, are meltdown-proof. They also can throttle their output up and down, whereas the older plants were always run as baseline plants, meaning that they always ran flat out, and the changing demand for power is taken up by natural gas plants or coal plants. Mm-hmm. there's a heck of a lot of technology that's out there that could be used for a new generation of nuclear. You know, as far as the hazards go, we had one really bad nuclear accident, and that was Chernobyl.
Yep.
Back in 86. That accident, a lot of it was due with communist incompetence.
Right.
The plant had no containment vessel. It was operated in a very irresponsible fashion. And it used a graphite moderator, graphite being carbon. It can burn if it gets too hot, and that's mm-hmm. what happened.
What about Fukushima, though, in Japan after that tsunami? That's what people are really going to bring up. Chernobyl was a long time ago. And then, of course, we had Three Mile Island, which really wasn't that big a deal, I guess.
None of those accidents released any significant amount of radiation,
uh-huh.
even though there's a bunch of hysteria. You hear the news in the U.S. saying, well, the radiation has arrived from Fukushima. It just means that we can easily measure very, very small quantities of radiation. Those plants had containment vessels so that the radiation couldn't leak out.
Okay, what else should we know? Let's wrap it up. Any closing thoughts?
Sort of the big picture thing is that back in 1961, President Eisenhower, in his farewell address — this is a farewell address where he said, beware of the military-industrial complex.
Right.
He also said in that same speech, beware of the technological-scientific complex. He was afraid that scientists going on to federal support — prior to World War II, science was mostly privately funded.
Mm-hmm.
He was afraid that they would start to warp the science in order to control federal policy.
Which really nobody can deny that that has happened, because it's become a political... It's like, if you're researching something that is against the narrative, you're not going to get any funding. You know, you're just not going to get... Nobody's going to fund you if you're researching the benefits of nuclear power or any of this, right? Go ahead.
If you think up a scientific theory that predicts some kind of doomsday, you're going to get a lot of attention and a lot of money. And
mm-hmm.
the global warming science is very, very weak, you know. There might be a small amount of global warming caused by CO2. The data just doesn't show very much.
Mm-hmm.
And we can't really nail it to being caused by CO2. But they have to really stick to this narrative, because if they started saying, well, maybe we're wrong and stuff like that, their funding would go down the toilet. So you really have a situation where there are a lot of honest scientists, but those guys generally, they have to keep their mouth shut or they're going to have trouble.
Yeah, they got to feed their family. Good stuff.
Exactly.
Give out your website and tell people where they can find out more.
Sure. Dumbenergy.com.
Dumbenergy.com. Norm, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Join us March 23rd and 24th for the 2019 Meet the Masters of Income Property.
Let's break this down and look at some of the strengths of income property as an asset class.
I found that this event is really helpful because I'm totally a newbie to real estate investment, and so I picked up so much information.
One of the great things about it is that it's so fragmented, right? Embrace the fragmentation.
I've actually been learning a lot about tax benefits to real estate, and I've been investing actually well over 10 years now, and I learned a lot of new things today.
The other advantage of this weekend is networking, meeting new property managers, meeting new area specialists, and seeing the product they have to offer. That changes year by year.
Register now at jasonhartman.com/masters.
Thank you so much for listening. Please be sure to subscribe so that you don't miss any episodes. Be sure to check out the show's specific website and our general website, hartmanmedia.com, for appropriate disclaimers and terms of service. Remember that guest opinions are their own, and if you require specific legal or tax advice or advice in any other specialized area, please consult an appropriate professional. And we also very much appreciate you reviewing the show. Please go to iTunes or Stitcher Radio or whatever platform you're using and write a review for the show. We would very much appreciate that. And be sure to make it official and subscribe so you do not miss any episodes. We look forward to seeing you on the next episode.